That'll start in October. If you have questions about that, come find me. But as we step into 1 Thessalonians this morning, I want you to think with me about something, this concept, this idea that why you do something is just as important as what you do. Why you're doing something is just as important as what you're doing. And it's because of this that you hear a lot of motivational speakers and influencers on social media pose a question like this: what's your why? Anybody heard that question before? What's your why? Pretty common, popular question. What's your purpose? What fuels you? What leads you to do what you do? There's an entire poster industry dedicated to answering this question. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. It must have impacted me more than I thought. But such a vivid memory of my seventh grade science teacher in his class. He had this poster on the wall. And you've seen these posters everywhere, especially in school. But it has some kind of generic nature scene. And then underneath it, like one word, like excellence, teamwork. And then underneath that, some catchy phrase. I don't remember what the phrase was on this poster. I just remember the eagle flying through the mountains and the word excellence underneath it. And that was supposed to motivate us for science and to be excited about what was going on there. To motivate us, to inspire us. So our actions certainly matter, but the motivations behind those actions also matter. It's not uniquely Christian to think about motivation, but there is a uniquely Christian motivation. There's a why that is only in those who know and follow Jesus. Why we serve the Lord is just as important as what we do to serve the Lord. Why we serve the Lord is just as important as how we serve the Lord. What motivates us as we live for Jesus in this world is important because it can make the difference between finishing well and giving up. What motivates us is important because it can make the difference between spreading the gospel and being an obstacle to the gospel. As we step into chapter 2 of 1 Thessalonians, we're going to see what motivates Paul in his ministry. He's in this chapter, we're going to look at verses 1 through 12 this morning. But in this section, he's defending himself to the Thessalonians because some people are questioning his motives. And because they're questioning his motives, they're questioning his ministry. And Paul's going to defend himself and remind them of why he does what he does. Not just to defend himself, but to be a model for the Thessalonians to follow and a model for us to follow as people walking with Christ today. So just to kind of give you a heads up at the beginning, this is somewhat of a different sermon because it's not so much like, all right, you heard the sermon, now go do this, action step A or action step B. Sometimes those things are helpful in a sermon and clear in a passage, but this isn't so much about what to go do with your hands, but more about what's going on in your heart. And this is important because you and I are not just people that do actions or say words. We are people who have hearts and souls, and why we're doing things matters. So as we go through this, let's take this as an opportunity, as an invitation to reflect on who we are as people, to reflect on what motivates us, to reflect on what moves us to follow Jesus. So 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, if you're not already there, go ahead and jump there. And if you want to follow on the blue Bible in front of you, it's on page 986, 1 Thessalonians 2. As I read verses 1 to 12, listen for a rhythm here. There's a rhythm of, we weren't like this when we were with you, we were like this. We didn't do things because of this, we did things because of this. So listen to that rhythm of not this but this, not this but this, as we're reading through verses 1 to 12. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 1. For you yourselves know, brothers, that our coming to you was not in vain. But though we had already suffered and been shamefully treated at Philippi, as you know, we had boldness in our God to declare to you the gospel of God in the midst of much conflict. For our appeal does not spring from error or impurity or any attempt to deceive, but just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak, not to please man, but to please God, who tests our hearts. For we never came with words of flattery, as you know, nor with a pretext for greed. God is witness. Nor did we seek glory from people, whether from you or from others, that we could have made demands as apostles of Christ. But we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. For you remember, brothers, our labor and toil. We worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you while we proclaim to you the gospel of God. You are witnesses, and God also, how holy and righteous and blameless was our conduct towards you believers. For you know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. As we walk through these 12 verses, we're going to see these four connected motivations that were driving Paul and his team. And they all kind of build on each other. They all work together. And the first of those is that they were motivated by courage, not comfort. Motivated by courage, not comfort. What Paul says in chapter 2, when he wrote this letter, he did not put a giant 2 right there. It was just a continuation of what he was writing. So this is just an ongoing thought of what he said in chapter 1 that we saw last week. So in chapter 2, verse 1, he says, "For you yourselves know, brothers, that our coming to you was not in vain." He says, you know our time with you wasn't in vain. It wasn't empty. It wasn't pointless. Well, how do they know that? Well, he knows that because they responded to the gospel. That's what he says. Look back up in verse 9 and 10 of chapter 1. "For they themselves report concerning us the kind of reception we had among you and how you turned to God from idols to serve the living and true God." So he said, when we came to you, it wasn't pointless. It wasn't empty. It wasn't a failure because you received the gospel that we preached. And then he turns to defend his motives and defend his methods. Because the issue is, if these Christians start doubting his motives, and if they start doubting his methods, they're going to start doubting his message. If they think he had bad motives and he had bad methods, then maybe the message is bad. Maybe the gospel is wrong. Maybe Jesus isn't who Paul says he is. So for Paul, this is not about his reputation. It's about the gospel's reputation. It's about God's reputation. And he goes on to explain why he came to preach the gospel to them in the first place. Look at verse 2. "But though we had already suffered and been shamefully treated at Philippi, as you know, we had boldness in our God to declare to you the gospel of God in the midst of much conflict." He refers to this other experience that he and the missionaries with him had, just a few days before they came to Thessalonica originally. And we saw this a few weeks ago, if you were with us back at the end of August. This all happened in Acts 16. Paul and Silas heal this demon-possessed girl. But the problem with that is, at the time, her owners were using the things the demon was doing in her to earn money for themselves. So when they healed her, the owners were extremely furious about it. And they stir up this whole commotion, and they cause an uproar. Paul and Silas get thrown in jail. And the Lord rescued them out of jail, but they still faced opposition. And Paul says, "This experience could have caused me to quit. It could have destroyed our confidence. But in spite of that, we still came to Thessalonica and had boldness in our God to declare to you the gospel." It wasn't like they were going from a hard place to an easy place. They were going from a hard place to another hard place to preach the gospel. Because when they got to Thessalonica, we saw this last week in Acts 17, this riot was stirred up because of a ministry there. They were staying with a guy named Jason. He was hosting the missionaries at his house. And they dragged Jason out into the streets because of this commotion stirred by the gospel. But it didn't turn them away. They didn't give up. Paul and the other missionaries dared to speak the gospel. They dared to keep going. That's why Paul says in chapter 2, our coming to you was not in vain. We didn't come with an empty message. We didn't see empty results. We were effective and we were fruitful because God gave us the boldness to endure conflict and keep speaking up about Jesus. They were motivated by courage, not comfort. And they were willing to sacrifice their own safety. It cost them. They faced threats. They faced pain. They faced pushback. But Paul modeled this clear priority, and he's saying to them here, our priority was not our safety. Our priority was your souls. We didn't live based on what benefited us in the moment. We lived based on what benefited you for eternity. And if you and I live the Christian life motivated by comfort, we're going to draw boundary lines around our obedience to God. God, here's what I'm willing to do for you in this box right here. And anything outside of this, I'm not willing to do because it's uncomfortable. And it doesn't only apply to a professional ministry role like a missionary or a pastor. This applies to who you are as a parent, who you are as a leader, who you are as an employee, as a church member, as a student. If we are motivated by comfort, we will make God's call submit to our comfort level and our comfort zone. But if we're motivated by courage, it doesn't mean we're reckless and irresponsible. But it means we lay aside our comfort zone, trust Him to make us bold, and obey His call. Our ministry, our lives, our obedience to Jesus must be motivated by courage, not by comfort. And we see even deeper roots of this in the next section. Paul is just kind of taking us deeper and deeper into why he did what he did. The next motivation is that Paul and we are to be motivated by God-pleasing, not people-pleasing. By God-pleasing, not people-pleasing. This is another one of those, as we look at verses 3 and 4, not this, but this. We didn't do it because of this. We did it because of this. Look with me at verse 3. For our appeal does not, here's the not part, our appeal, our preaching, our ministry does not spring from error or impurity or any attempt to deceive. So Paul says, we didn't preach to you with lies. We didn't preach to you with unholy behavior. We didn't preach to you with tricks just to try to get your attention or to work up a crowd. Our goal was not to gain popularity. But here's what we were like. Here's what we did do. Verse 4. But just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak not to please man, but to please God who tests our hearts. Paul says, God has called us to this. He has entrusted us with the gospel. Therefore, our goal is to please Him. He saved us. He called us. He sent us out for this task. So our aim is to please Him. Our decisions and our actions and our words were not motivated by what people wanted us to do, but what God called us to do. In Paul's day in that part of the world, it was common to see public speakers who traveled from place to place performing for crowds and impressing them with their eloquent speech and powerful presentations. We might not have the exact same thing today. It just all happens digitally on social media. People trying to gain followers and even twist in some truth of Jesus in there. But what Paul's doing here is he's trying to show them, I'm not like those guys at all. I'm not trying to build a crowd. I'm not trying to gain popularity. I'm not trying to make money. His goal was not to increase his own popularity. He didn't want to make his own name great. He wanted to make Jesus' name great. And do you know what's interesting? Is that you can see two people doing the same Christian thing, but inside they both have two completely different motivations. You can have one person who's doing it to make their own name great, and another person who's doing it to make Jesus' name great. But from the outside, it looks the same. This is why I'm saying, we have to reflect on ourselves here. We have to see this as a mirror for us to look in here. And this motivation for Paul, it's obvious in the way Paul even talks in these verses. Let your eyes just skim over verses 1 through 12 and think about what name do you see that comes up the most here? What name comes up the most in verses 1 through 12 as you just skim over it? And you can shout it out to me. What name do you think comes up the most? God. God does. But Paul's defending himself, but he doesn't talk about himself the most. He talks about God. Paul was not the main character in what he wrote here, and he didn't see himself as the main character in how he lived. When you and I live each day as if we are the main character, and we all do this, I do this, you do this. When you are stuck in traffic where Highway 53 turns into one lane, and it's such a beautiful gift the Lord has given us right now as people who live here. We thank him for it every day. But when you're thinking about that situation and how inconvenient that is, who's the main character in the story you're telling yourself? You. Because I'm the main character of the story I'm telling myself. I'm not thinking about you. I'm thinking, man, why do people got to leave the same time I do? I'll just kind of go in the right lane and sneak up here. It's open until you get to the orange cones, and then I'll get over and cut in front of 50 cars on the way. I haven't done that. I've just seen other people do that, and I pray for them when I see them, as I know you do. But when we live each day as if we are the main character, when we live each day most worried about what people think about us, what we do and what we don't do is going to be determined by whatever's going to make a person or a group of people happy. Whatever's going to make them like us, whatever's going to make them accept us, whatever's going to make them approve of us. You might think that's like a middle school thing or a high school thing, but that never goes away. It's always with us. And the way this affects your walk with Jesus is it reshapes the Bible, it reshapes Christianity into whatever kind of life gets the highest approval rating in our culture. If we take following Jesus and try to dress it up to make it more likable, we're no longer following Jesus. We're following whoever it is we're trying to please. And this is all about where our confidence comes from. And verse 4, look there with me again. Paul is steering us in the right direction. Notice where his confidence, where his security is. But just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak not to please man, but to please God who tests our hearts. The assurance that God approves us through Jesus. There's no need to perform. There's no need to impress. It gives us confidence before him, and that in turn makes it our sole motivation to please him. Not to try to earn something with him. Jesus already did that. But out of gratitude for what he's done for us through Christ and the life he's called us to. Paul's not just defending himself, but also calling us to imitate him in living the kind of life where your main goal is not to be true to yourself, but your main goal is to be true to God. As Christians, the strongest motivation behind everything we do should be to please him, because ultimately his approval is the only one that matters. And it's as we seek to please God that we begin to take on the character of God and how we live, which leads us to the third piece of our motivation here. That's motivated by giving, not taking. Motivated by giving, not taking. We're going to jump in at verse 5, and we're going to see, here's what it looked like for them to please God and not please people. Verse 5. For we never came with words of flattery. Here's that not this, but this again, that pair, that rhythm. For we never came with words of flattery, as you know, nor with a pretext for greed. God is witness. Nor did we seek glory from people, whether from you or from others, though we could have made demands as apostles of Christ. But we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. Paul very clearly points out the way that he and his teammates, they refused to do anything that would cause people to doubt the good news of Jesus. He says in verse 5, we never came with words of flattery. We didn't come just saying what you wanted to hear. We didn't come just trying to butter you up. And then he says, we also didn't come with a pretext for greed. We didn't hide selfish motives behind what looked like pure motives. Our godliness was not just a show. It was genuine. And then in verse 6, he says, we did not seek glory from people, whether from you or from others. We didn't show up to receive honor from you, he says, though there was a right honor we could have received because we're apostles. That wasn't our goal. All those negatives, we didn't come with words of flattery. We didn't come with greed. We didn't come seeking glory. Those are all ways of taking. Our motivation was not to come and take, to take money for ourselves, to take attention for ourselves, to take glory for ourselves from other people. He wasn't like one of those speakers who came into town only concerned for himself and what he could get from the people there. He didn't come to take. He came to give. And this is how Christians live. This is what every aspect of any kind of ministry is about. We follow the pattern of our Savior, who came not to be served, but to serve. That's why Paul says in verse 7, but this contrast, we didn't come to take, but we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. They were bold and they were courageous, but it was expressed in gentleness and love and compassion. Paul uses the analogy of a mom. If anybody knows about giving rather than taking, it's a mom. He's saying we were like a nursing mother taking care of her own children among you. A faithful mom lives to meet the needs of her kids. Her life takes on the shape of the needs of her kids. And ultimately, that mom oftentimes sacrifices her own needs to help meet her kids' needs. And Paul's saying, this is what we did. We loved and cared for you in such a way that we were really willing to sacrifice our needs, our desires, and our lives for you so that you could know Jesus and follow him. And he expands on this in verse 8. He says, so being affectionately desirous of you, we loved you, we cared for you. We were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. We didn't just give you the gospel, he says. We gave you ourselves. We gave you our energy. We gave you our time. We gave you our efforts. He modeled, Paul did, a clear love and commitment to other people. And we should model our lives in ways that we serve, that God calls us to serve at church or in a job or at home, like this. Pleasing God and loving other people, it requires certain tasks and responsibilities, but it's not about the tasks. It's about the people that we're serving. If we live a godly life to just accomplish ministry tasks, we're not giving, we're taking. If it's just about, I checked this off, I did this, I served this way, I helped this person, then it's more about me satisfying my own conscience or me just feeling good about what I did than it is about actually serving the other person. A life of genuine ministry. And when I say ministry, I don't mean somebody who's a pastor or a missionary, but we all have ministry the Lord has called us to. Whether that's at your school, at your house, with your neighbors, with your family, at your work. A life of genuine ministry is about giving your whole self for the sake of other people. You share your life with them. You invest in them. And many of you do this so well. You've taught me more about how to do this. I'm learning how to do this by watching many of you. You do this so well as a church. So it's not just about, we're not just ministry robots who just come in here and do some ministry task and then leave. You love well. You care for people so well. But if we only love ourselves, we will just take and take and take. But genuinely loving others leads us to give so that they can know Christ, so that they can walk with him. And all of this has a goal. All of this that we've been talking about has a goal. It's not just ministry for the sake of ministry. It's not just obedience for the sake of obedience. It's not just faithfulness for the sake of faithfulness. There's an end in mind. And that's where Paul kind of comes to a crescendo here at the very end, as we see this last motivation, that we're motivated by heaven, not earth. Motivated by heaven, not earth. This last motive is the foundation of all the other motives. Everything that Paul is moving towards. We'll pick up in verse 10. You are witnesses, and God also, how holy and righteous and blameless was our conduct towards you believers. He again affirms, we lived what we preached. Our lives were characterized by holiness. Our lives were characterized by righteous living. We were people of integrity, people who obeyed the word. Then he gives us another family analogy. Look at verse 11. For you know how like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you. Like a faithful father with his kids, Paul wanted the best for the Thessalonians. And he knew that what would be the best for them is for them to live holy lives. What would be the best for them is to live the life God was calling them to live, to move towards the future God was moving all things towards. And what he's encouraging and charging and exhorting them towards is the motivation of motivations. Verse 12. We exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you. Here's the goal. To walk in a manner worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. This is the goal, to walk in a manner worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. The reason we want to be motivated by courage, not comfort, the reason we want to be motivated by God-pleasing, not people-pleasing, the reason we want to be motivated by giving, not taking, is so that we and others can walk in a manner worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. This doesn't mean we have to earn our way into God's kingdom. He's not saying walking worthy means you got to like make yourself worthy. No, only Jesus, through his perfect life and his death in our place, can bring a person into God's kingdom. So what it means, though, is that everything Paul was doing was to encourage and challenge the Thessalonians to show that they're truly saved by Jesus, to show that they're part of the kingdom of God, to live in a way that shows they are headed towards heaven. It's the climax of everything he's saying here, of everything he did in ministry. Everything Paul did was built on future hope, the hope that God will do what he promises to do. And in reality, being motivated by courage and being motivated by God-pleasing and being motivated by giving makes no sense if earth is all there is. But because one day God is going to call his people into his own kingdom and glory, living this way for these reasons is completely worth it. And we think, Lord, haste the day when my faith shall be sight, and the clouds be rolled back as a scroll. The trump shall resound, and the Lord shall descend. That reality, that image, that moment is what makes living for Christ and helping others live for Christ worth it. Because there's going to be times where it doesn't feel or look worth it right now. But that's because there's a lot more than just right now that we're living for. Last week, Paul took them to the past, and he said in chapter 1, verse 4, we know, brothers loved by God, that he has chosen you. So he says, we know God chose you, that God has saved you, and now he's bringing them into the future. We know God's going to call you into his own kingdom and into his own glory. God started a work in you. He's going to finish this good work when Jesus returns. So now keep going. Stay faithful. Be steadfast in your obedience. And I said all these motivations were leading to this one because Paul's motivation to please God led him to want others to please him. Walk in a manner worthy of God. Paul says, I want to please God, and because I want to please God, I want you to please God. I want that to be the goal of your life. And those two motivations are inseparable. They always go in this order because we have to want to please God genuinely before we will genuinely want others to please God. So there's work, like I said at the beginning, that we have to do in our own hearts here before we think about who else needs to hear this. Because of God's future promises, because heaven is real, because Jesus will return, there is no better way to live. There is no better motivation. How real is eternity to you? How real of a sense do you and I live with of eternity, heaven, hell? What difference does eternity make in our lives right now? What things can we point to and say, the only reason he or she would ever do that is because of eternity and God's promises? Are there aspects of our lives that can only be explained by a deep-rooted belief in the reality of heaven? And Paul's going to talk more and more about the future and more about heaven later in this book. But our future life with God is a foundational motive for our present life with God. So we're motivated by heaven, not by earth. In light of all this, we have to consider and ask ourselves as a church, what is the ultimate goal of our ministry? What's the ultimate goal of what I'm doing to serve? What's the ultimate goal of my life? What am I aiming for? What is my why for following Jesus and wanting others to follow him? The ultimate why is God himself. He is our motive. We are moved by courage because he makes us bold. We are moved to please him because he saved us. We are moved to give because he gave us his son. And we are moved towards heaven because we will spend forever with him.